as a parent, I continuously learn that in order to be the best parent I can be, I need to continually fall more in love with myself, give myself more love, compassion, grace, and care, that whenever there's challenging, whenever there's challenges in relationships, it's really an indicator and a sign of, it's sort of a mirror of what's going on out there is kind of a mirror of what's going on in here.
Welcome to the Permission to Heal podcast. I am Marcy Brockman. Together, we will discover what brings us healing, meaning, and true joy. You only need your own permission to begin. I am very proud of this Permission to Heal podcast. I want to thank all of you for listening each week, and I'm so glad that it speaks to you. Creating and producing this podcast brings joy to my life, but I honestly need your help because I find commercials annoying when I listen to podcasts. I don't have commercials on Permission to Heal, so I am missing out on potential advertising revenue. I pay for the costs of creating, producing, and marketing this podcast out of my own pocket, and I'm happy to do so, except that times are kind of tough right now, and I could use your help. So through Patreon and a Patreon subscription, you can support the Permission to Heal podcast and help ensure that I'm able to make more episodes and share them with the world. There are several subscription levels that come with different perks and swag. If you're able to, and if you are inclined to, I would really, really appreciate your help. Please go to www.patreon.com/permission to heal. Patreon, patreon.com/permission to heal. And it's linked in the show notes. So scroll down, click away. Thank you so much for your consideration. I hope you and your families are well and happy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Permission to Heal. I am Marcy Brockman, and I am happy that you are here. I'm using the word happy because today's guest is one of the few certified chief happiness officers in the world. Tia Graham was trained in Denmark and is a certified chief happiness officer. I love this title. She has just written a book called Be a Happy Leader, Stop Feeling Overwhelmed, Thrive Personally, and Achieve Killer Business Results that can be applied to businesses and families and church groups and schools and anywhere where there's a group of people involved. She is an international speaker, an author, a consultant on positive psychology. She's worked with dozens of global companies like Goldman Sachs, Hilton Hotels, and Hewlett-Packard to elevate employee engagement and drive bottom line results. She has a company that she founded called Arrive at Happy, where she combines neuroscience, positive psychology, and motivation, and has an 8-step method that she has created to help grow a culture of happiness in whatever human endeavor you arrive on. She's just really energetic and full of zest and full of life, and really talks about happiness in a very tangible, useful way. Please welcome Tia Graham. Hello, Tia. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm so happy to be with you.
And happy birthday. You just told me it was your birthday. It's so exciting.
Thank you.
How are you going to celebrate today?
Well, I actually celebrated over the weekend with my husband and daughters, and we went skiing for a couple of days at the local ski hill, and it was sunny, so that was the birthday gift.
Lovely, lovely. Mm-hmm. And your happy leader book behind you, I see.
Yes, launches leader tomorrow, actually, January 18th.
Wow. Oh, so this is perfect timing for you.
Perfect timing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Be a happy leader. It's a happy book cover, man.
Yeah, I wanted people to feel, you know, to feel joyful when they were looking at it. That was definitely intentional.
That's great. So tell us about your book.
So the book is it's for leaders within organizations, but it's also You could be a leader within your community, within your church, nonprofit, within your family. I think I believe we're all leaders. So the book is a tool to inspire people and to motivate people to use the science of happiness and neuroscience research to design a life where they are happy, fulfilled, and content. And in it, it has my 8-step methodology to be a happy leader. The first step is start with you. You know, you can't do anything else without starting with you.
Of course.
And then there are 7 other steps. Some of them are about leading teams and leading people, and some are business steps as well on how to, the subtitle really is what it is about, how to stop feeling overwhelmed. We were talking about that earlier, how to thrive personally and achieve killer business results. And woven throughout are personal stories of both work and personal trials and tribulations, so people feel connected and also get to know me as part of this story.
So do you reveal personal stories, or are they anecdotes or narratives of other people?
So there are some stories about other people. And then I also included different stories from my life too. And how I came to have this company called Arrive at Happy. And I led teams in the hotel industry for 14 years before becoming an entrepreneur.
Cool.
So there's some business leadership stories, but so much of the book is about happiness. And so I wanted people to feel connected to my continual journey for happiness and then lifting others up as well.
That's great. I mean, I think happiness is such a word that happy and happiness are words that we have been batting around since we were in diapers. How would you actually define happiness?
Yeah, yes. And there's so many myths and misconceptions around happy and happiness also. So for me, happiness is a commitment to joy and having meaning and purpose in your life. And it's also accepting the peaks and valleys of life, the highs and the struggles and the challenges. And I always say a happy life is not one void of pain. Everyone has painful emotions and goes through challenges. So that's what happiness is to me.
It makes a lot of sense. I'm a public high school English teacher, and really for the last few years, but especially since the whole pandemic started, I am approaching the literature that I teach from a mental health standpoint. Mm. And we're taking a look at what characters did within the sequence of a conflict and a plot, but why they did the things that they did. You know, she may be the antagonist of the story, but what motivated her to do that? And so in tandem to that, I've been showing a lot of TED Talks about happiness and meaning and gratitude. And while I was reading your bio and doing research on you, it reminded me of 2 TED Talks. One was by Emily Esfahani Smith, who does a whole thing about meaning. And she says that meaning, life purpose, and the giving and receiving of generosity is what makes happiness. And so rather than focusing just on happiness as the goal, by bringing meaningful experiences and seeking meaningful experiences in community and being generous with others and allowing them to be generous with us is what creates the happiness.
Right, right.
Which is very in tandem with the things that you say.
Yes, and, yes. I completely agree with everything you just said. Absolutely.
And David Stendahl Rast talks about gratitude as the secret of happiness. And that fits in like a puzzle piece as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes I get asked, you know, what's the trick or what's the quick? And I say, no, there is no trick.
There
is no quick. This is this, you know, holistic and a holistic approach. And there are so many pieces to it, right? Just like taking care of our physical immune system. We've all been in this challenging few years. We're just talking about, it's not, you can't just do one thing and be healthy. There's so many pieces.
Yeah. Similar, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Exactly. Right. For our psychology and our emotional well-being, and gratitude is a piece. Absolutely. Giving and compassion and, you know, intellectual well-being where you're learning and growing. There are all these different parts of the puzzle. And yeah, it's a lifelong marathon.
Yeah. I remember after my divorce in 2007, I stood in my, I had to move. We sold the marital residence and I stood in my new house. The kids had gone. It was the first weekend that we were sharing custody. So they had gone to their dad's. They were very little at the time. Yeah. And I stood in my new living room with tears in my eyes. And I'm like, now what the fuck do I do?
Yeah, of course.
Like I have my life, except for the motherhood piece. And I had a very stable career, which I'm still teaching in the same school. So I had two really big things nailed down that I was good at, that I loved, that brought me a lot of meaning and joy and happiness. But there's more to life than working and being a mom. Like, where was the Marcy piece coming from? I cried for hours and I walked around the bedroom smelling their things. I was like a really pathetic, disgusting mess.
No, and you're a totally normal human being.
Totally normal human being, yeah.
But then I'd be doing the same thing.
Oh, it's a disaster. But it wasn't a disaster, you know, because I had to, I realized at some point that my life was a clean slate. And that in starting over, it was totally up to me and only up to me as to how I was going to design or create this life that would bring me the things that I was craving.
Yes. The community, and I love that you used the word design.
Yeah. And it took me, I have to say, a good decade to figure out exactly where I was going. Mm-hmm. And it isn't, there is no destination.
Yeah.
You know, there, it's not like, okay, I have the life I want, I'm done, I'm going to wish. And there probably are plenty of people who get to a point where they're like, okay, the kids are good, the job's good, the house is good, my marriage is good, you know, I have some sort of other group, I'm done. I'm just going to skate through, this is it, this is where my happiness is. And hats off to those people. Mm-hmm. But I'm a wanderer, I'm a seeker, there's always something else. The goalpost keeps moving for me.
Right. But you're exactly right. And I talk about this in the book, Be a Happy Leader, that when you recognize and connect with the journey is the destination, you know, we are sort of programmed to think, oh, get here, do this, have this, achieve this, and external validation, so forth. But, you know, I talk about this a lot of time. I say 99.99% of life is the Monday mornings. Thursday night is, you know, that's so when you can connect with helping others and, you know, giving in generosity and having meaning and purpose and taking care of your physical body and all of these different parts, that your life circumstances are going to change, but you can have this internal compass that helps you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And how would you suggest to somebody that they get in touch with that internal compass? You know, if they haven't been in tune to listening inward and they're just trying to figure this out, what's your strategy? What works for you to tune into that?
Yes. So I actually talk about this in a book and thank you for asking. So what I say to people who ask me that question is to, you know, close your eyes and get quiet and connect to a time in your life when you felt really happy. And this is, of course, personal. For some people, they might have to go all the way back to early childhood. Some people, you know, it might be a different stage. But to connect to that, one, to know that you can be there. And maybe there's some people that have said, you know, it never was, right? But I would say even it could be a week, and it doesn't have to be like a 3-year period. So connect to a time where you felt content and aligned. And then to get very clear on how you want to feel. You know, a lot of times we focus on what do you want to do? Who do you want to be?
Right.
So I'm a big fan of Danielle Laporte and her work of just how do you want to feel? And so then understanding, you know, for some people, they might say, I want to feel calm and I want to feel serenity. Someone might be like, I want to be proud and excited. Depends on what's going on in your life. Right.
Right.
And then to use my advice is to use the science of happiness. So this is positive psychology, research coming from Harvard and Yale and Stanford and Berkeley, because it's not, there isn't the question of what makes us happy. We know there is so much research on makes us happy. So my advice is to grab some books, watch TED Talks, listen to podcasts that are research and scientists that know how to increase happiness, and you know how you want to feel, then go learn the proven tools and start applying those to connect to your compass. So, and like you said, if it's someone that's not sure, I think that's a great place to start, because you don't have to figure it out on your own. There's already a proven path.
Right. And to take that research, you know, that we know that humans are community driven creatures, that we can't survive independently completely. So how then to apply all of those tools to an individual life is completely and 100% utterly up to that individual. So what makes me happy and brings me meaning and community and love and belonging might be very different than what brings you those things or what brings someone else those things. And so I think that while they're getting quiet, as you say, and listening inward and trying to figure out their feelings, I think the question really is what creates, or what they think will create, those feelings within themselves. And then I think that's the next piece that you're talking about, is then creating the what from the how.
Yes. So the first, yes, exactly. So the first is connecting to self. And I will say, you do not need to do this alone, right? Some people, like in my case, when I was going through a huge transition, I was super unhappy after returning to work after the birth of my second daughter. I hired a life coach. Transformative experience.
Yeah.
Some people might hire a therapist. Some could use friends and family. You don't need to go at it alone. And if you are in a low place, you know, the research shows you do need to be talking to someone, and you do need to also be journaling, right? So that's the other step. So the first is choose that you want to work on your own happiness and work on yourself. And then, yes, based on your life circumstances, everyone's walk is going to be different. But I will say, and there are universal truths for human beings for happiness. So for example, the number one predictor of human happiness is human connection.
Yes.
And that means spending time with people you care about and who care about you. So right there, that would be a place to start of how could I increase my human connection? Another one is, you know, your body. If you are unhappy and you're not sleeping, you're not eating healthy food, you're not meditating, you're not exercising, it's going to be very difficult to feel well in your mind because of the mind-body connection, you know?
So that's a piece I was missing for a very long time.
Yeah. No, and busy life with working with kids, it's, you know, hard to put a line.
Busy working mom. I didn't have myself on my list of priorities for a very long time.
Yeah. And most working moms don't, right? It's like,
By the time I get to myself, it's 11 o'clock at night. I get up at 5 a.m. So I'm dead, you know?
Yeah. Like, great. I get 5 minutes.
Woo! Yay. What am I going to do with that? Yeah. That's nuts. Nope. Yeah. I saw in the decade that I was single between marriages and I was dating like a mad woman, I knew that part of my happiness equation was a committed relationship. I was looking for another husband, but, you know, somebody who was a better fit. And I was dating for a couple of years and really miserable about it, you know, like gaslighting sons of bitches out there, you know, it was just like terrible one after the other. It was
bad
disaster.
Energy. Yeah.
It was disaster. It was an energy drain. It was exhausting. And I remember sitting across the table at a fancy restaurant with some guy. I can't even tell you who. I don't even remember who he was. And I had this epiphany that I didn't like who I was. I didn't like the way I felt. This is the connection where we got to, how I got to this tangent. I didn't like how I felt sitting across the table from this man. And although it was not a match, because I obviously don't know who he is, it was a very pivotal moment because it was the first time, and I was in my mid-40s, it was the first time that I actually realized that it was more important for me to like myself and to like the way I felt in that moment with that other person than it was whether they liked me at all, whether I even liked them. It didn't, none of that mattered. What mattered is how I felt here and how authentic I felt comfortable or vulnerable I felt comfortable being. And I've used that same lesson, that epiphany, I've then applied to every other part of my life. Does this make me feel happy?
Yeah, that's the compass.
Right. Do I feel joy doing this? Do I feel like it brings my life meaning when I do this? Do I like who I am? Do I respect who I am? Am I hiding anything that's really about my true self because I'm afraid or to be too vulnerable? And if I ask all of these questions and the answer is no to any of them, I don't do the thing, whatever it is. Date the guy, take the job, do the gig, whatever.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, what you said is so valuable. And this is a lifelong journey too.
Yeah.
You know, I remember learning that from, because I studied with the happiness professor, Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar, who taught at Harvard University. And he said, every relationship you have stems with the relationship you have with yourself, right? Which of course, and I'll say, and as a parent, I continuously learn that in order to be the best parent I can be, I need to continually fall more in love with myself, give myself more love, compassion, you know, grace and care, that whenever there's challenges in relationships, it's really an indicator and a sign of, you know, and look inward.
Right.
Look inward, because it's sort of a mirror of what's going on out there is kind of a mirror of what's going on in here.
Right. You can't be relentlessly compassionate and non-judgmental with your children if you can't be that way with yourself.
Yeah.
You're not teaching them how to be that way for themselves if they're looking at you and you're not doing it.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And the emotion piece of the, when you were saying of just like, you know, how you were feeling is this reframe. I always talk about this reframe is never say negative emotions, because just by saying negative emotions or negative feelings, you think that they're bad or they're bad for you. And this reframe of they're difficult or they're painful, you know, and they're really, all the emotions are it's information, right? Your feelings are talking to you. They're telling you something. Something's going on if you're full of anger, or something's going on if you're full of guilt or you know, discomfort, whatever it is. And instead of turning away, to actually turn in, and that's the tricky part, but then get silent and you know, sit with those too and understand what's going on.
Well, I understand the lean in thing. I understand turning toward it. But what do you mean by reframing the language? Like, you shouldn't say I'm angry at something?
No. So you shouldn't use the term. This is my opinion. Opinion is,
well, that's what we're here to hear.
Yeah. Is you shouldn't say, you shouldn't ever call them negative emotions. A lot of times people will call them positive emotions and negative emotions.
Oh, they're just emotions.
Like, joy would be positive. Fear, stress would be negative. It's like, no, stress isn't negative. Might be painful, might be challenging, but just by calling it negative.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you can say name the emotions themselves, but not to categorize them.
No, you can categorize them. You can categorize them, but don't say they're negative. You could categorize them as painful.
Oh, whoa. Okay. Now I'm clear. Okay. Now I understand.
Yeah. Because a happiness trap is we feel bad about having painful emotions. So someone might be having a lot of anxiety and then they feel bad about themselves that they're having anxiety, as opposed to you're a human and there's things going on and you're feeling anxious.
and feeling anxious in certain situations is the appropriate response.
Exactly. Because
you're awake and you're paying attention.
Exactly. Right? And what's making you anxious? Yeah. But we feel like we're doing something wrong for having them.
Well, there's so much that we grow up, we absorb in the ether about how things are quote unquote supposed to be.
Absolutely.
And then attach so much shame and self-judgment to our perceived lack of achieving that. And rather than focusing on the thing that we want, we're too busy focusing on the shame that we didn't get it or that we don't have it. And that's just serious levels of bullshit. Just forget that.
Yeah. And a lot of us didn't grow up. I mean, I didn't. My family did not talk about things like you and I are talking about right now. We were not talking about emotional well-being, you know.
No, I was just thinking about survival. My mom was an undiagnosed self-medicated bipolar and who she wound up being an opiate drug addict later in her life. And so my whole modus operandi was get out alive, you know.
Right.
Try to mitigate. I felt responsible for her feelings. And as an only child, very empathic, I would feel what she
emotional
would
contagion. Yes.
Absolutely. And it wasn't my job and it wasn't my responsibility, but it took me a very long time to figure out how to undo all that had been done. And and I'm still working on it. You know,
I was going to say, so I grew up with alcoholism in the family. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm like still working on it.
Yeah. And most days I'm good. Most days I'm better than I've ever been. And then there's some, you know, I don't really like the word trigger, bothers me, but it's true that there are some little buttons, some things that happen that bring me right back. And I'm not like fully enmeshed in that past feeling, but I remember it. And in some way, it helps me realize how far I've come. So rather than looking at those triggers as negatives, I look at them as, you know, like growth charts.
Right. Right. That's it. That's a good way to look at it.
You know, it's a happier way of looking at it.
Well, hey, you know, positivity and optimism, it takes so much work and it's about focus, you know? So like you said, when you're looking at your past, you could look at all the, but then you just looked at the positive. You're like, and how far I've come, right? That's focusing on it.
Yeah.
Which some days are easier than other, right? Focusing on the positive.
Oh my God. Somewhere, I don't know whether it was I don't know where I heard it or read it, but you said something that I would like to ask about. You said that friendships at work are very important.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Yes. So this is from my own personal experience working in companies for many years. And now I work with companies as well as the research for happiness at work. So I'm a certified chief happiness officer for happiness at work.
I love that title, by the way. Oh,
thank you.
God.
It's a good title. That's awesome. I know. It's a good title. Thank you. And
did you coin that or is that actually a thing?
No, I went to Denmark and got certified. Yeah, there's about maybe 150 of us around the world. It's growing.
That Denmark's the place where...
Denmark is super happy. Finland, Norway, Scandinavia. Yeah, they come out the top in the World Happiness Report every year.
Yeah.
So friendship at work, and this is also supported by Gallup's research that shows that when people in a team authentically feel like they have friends at work or even a friend at work, they're going to be more productive, more motivated, more engaged, more connected. You'll have less turnover. You'll have less conflict within the teams and so on. So there's all these benefits, but you know, there's all the research side, but for me, I led sales and marketing teams in hotels and, you know, we would work really hard. We would be together a lot.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like you're in this hotel trying to fill this hotel with business and, you know, all in meetings, doing different things together, that the friendships are what made the work more fun, you know? So I don't know, part of me is like, it's just the right thing to do. You got a group of humans together. You don't want everyone individual. And of course, it's not about extroverted, introverted people. The friendships can, you know, be as they, you know, work for individuals, but there's research that supports it helps the company, even in terms of, you know, direct connection to how profitable a company is.
Right.
It also, yeah, just makes work more fun and enjoyable.
I feel deeply what you're saying is very true. I worked for a bunch of companies and before I became a teacher, and I really wasn't friends with anyone I worked with. I mean, I was sort of friendly enough to work with them, but, and I wasn't happy in any of those jobs. I mean, I didn't like what I was doing either. So, but it went hand in hand. Yeah. But I find that my teacher friends in my department and in my school building are immeasurably helpful in mitigating the stress of being in a classroom, especially during the pandemic. And it's really brought us all together much more closely. It sort of unified or knitted more closely our friendships and the support that we give one another as we're, you know, sometimes just venting or giving each other creative ideas or just, you know, chatting about life and whatever. Yeah. And it's for the first time in a long time, a bunch of us have gotten together outside of school to just hang out. And it really cements the closeness and the,
the you get to know each other friendship. And it directly connects to resilience at work.
Yeah.
You know, when you have friends, just like, if a, you know, a family member, when a storm comes, it's easier to go through the storm together than alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would even now, it depends on the team. Obviously this was pre-pandemic, but I used to have, you know, my team maybe was 20 people or so in Los Angeles, my last leadership job. And I would have them over to my apartment. I had a terrace and we would, you know, barbecue, hang out, not every single week by any means, but you know, not talk about work, but just get to know each other. And, you know, I talk about this in the book. I say, of course, work isn't, you know, it's not your family. It's never going to replace your family, but ideally, as a leader, you want people to stay. You don't want them to leave every 6 months, which everyone's talking about the great resignation. And so, yeah, foster those friendships. And, you know, there's different ways you can do it without spending lots of money, too.
Sure. Sure. Just in November, a couple of teachers and I went to a winery that we had a coupon for and had a nice little lunch. And it was pretty cheap and really pretty and very nice. And it was an hour and a half, but we had really good time, you know?
Yeah.
It was excellent. Excellent. So you said, I'm using my questions and I don't normally, but I did really well this time. You had said that humanity desperately needs more kindness and humanity. And I would love you to talk about that a little bit. Like, how do you think that we create this for ourselves and our families and our communities? And why is it so important now?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Have you watched the documentary, The Social Dilemma?
Yes.
Documentary?
Yes.
Okay. So
chills.
First thing that's coming to mind. So unfortunately, and I have a love-hate relationship with social media because I also love the connection and friends and family all over and all of that. I'm not saying don't use it at all. It also could be a great marketing tool, but it has created more divisiveness, and there is this rise of how people communicate with each other with a lack of kindness, you know? And so I really believe that humanity needs the tools and the support, right? Every single person on how to take care of themselves well, so that they can take care of their family, their friends, their neighbors, their community, and then, you know, whether spread out to your country where you live and so on. And we need this example for our kids.
Yeah.
So much we need this example for our kids. And you can't be expected to do it to others if you don't start taking care of yourself. And so I want to inspire people to always prioritize themselves, take care of themselves holistically, so that then they can be kind and generous to others. And there's so much research that shows that happier people are more kind and more generous, whether it's to people, whether it's to animals, whether it's to the earth. We need all three more than ever right now.
Absolutely.
And so that is part of my, gosh, part of my call and part of my message with this book and the work that I do.
So the book comes out tomorrow, you said?
Yes.
And we can buy it anywhere. We'd buy books online.
Yeah, you could buy anywhere online. Yes, exactly. Amazon, Barnes and Nobles. If you like to support local bookstores, it's on bookshop.org. And there's paperback, ebook. And I also recorded the audiobook too. So I know a lot of people like to listen.
Wasn't that fun? I recorded the audiobook for mine too. It was a lot of work, but fun. I enjoyed that process quite a bit.
Yes, a whole new way of experiencing, I thought, even as the author, it felt new.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really was the precursor or the stepping stone to creating the podcast, because it caused me to have to buy the equipment, you know, and to learn how to manage the audio files in GarageBand and so on.
Right.
And so when I had this epiphany, I had this guy who was an adjunct professor at a local college pop in to do a talk in my class virtually. And he was talking about the art of the podcast. Chuck Garcia was just a few episodes ago. And I just interviewed him this season too, like 2 weeks ago. And he was the impetus. You know, I'm fully believe that the universe brought him and his presentation for me, because my students couldn't have been less interested. And I thought they would eat it up, but they were not interested at all. And I was like, whoop, epiphany, like lightning in my brain. I know how to do all of these things. I have all of these pieces. So, yeah, the audiobook was really pivotal.
Yeah.
Really pivotal.
Yeah. That's great. So, yeah. So, yeah, it comes out. And then also I have three bonuses that come with it. So for everyone listening, I created a workbook and a mini course. It's an hour course, you know, 9 like 5-minute videos or so. And then there's also a resource kit with books that I love and TED Talks that I love that go with it. So when people buy the book, they can go to happyleaderbook.com and then grab all three bonuses.
Oh, that's very cool. So I will put all of that in the show notes. I'm going to write that down, leave myself a note. Yeah.
Happyleaderbook.com.
So if you're not driving while you're listening to this podcast, you can scroll down and all the links to the book and the happyleaderbook.com and all of her socials will all be in the show notes. If you're driving, please wait till you pull over.
Yeah, please don't text or write to yourself right now.
No. That's nuts. You talk about a broad perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that is?
Yes,
and why and what you're trying to explain to us?
Yes. So one of my steps in the 8-step methodology is really about zooming out. And in the book, I talk a lot about this perspective in an organization while you're working, but this can absolutely be applied to life in general, whether family or other pieces. So what this is about understanding that what you see and what you experience is not reality. It's only your tiny slice of reality, right? Who knows? Only
your perception, you know, of the tiny
God or higher power, whatever you want to say. There might be someone out there that could see everything. It's not you. It's not me. We just based on our experiences, you know, based on everything, that's what we see. So to be successful as a leader within an organization, I challenge and teach people to zoom out and look at the organization as a whole, holistically, you know? So maybe for me, I was a lead sales and marketing in the hotel, right? But I walked in each day acting and thinking as if, imagine if I owned this hotel. I never did, right? That's way wealthier people than me. But to have the perspective, and then that way you can see the organization from the perspective of your boss, of your peers, of all of these different. And so it really, truly
helps. Looking at all of the components as a larger
whole. Exactly. And it helps cement stronger relationships with your peers and colleagues, because you're not just like, well, this is what, you know, this is my department or this is what I see. And to consistently be checking in with yourself also on what way am I viewing this? What if I stopped, paused, and stepped back? How would that help? And so in that step in the book, I give people practical ways on exactly how to do this and how I did it.
Sounds very helpful.
Yeah.
In achieving understanding and relational happiness.
Yes, yes. And I also talk about this mindset of having conscious curiosity. And this is huge.
Yeah.
That when we approach work, life, in this case, right? When you approach work with conscious curiosity, that, you know, your ego gets aside, it's not about right or wrong or who gets the accolades, you know, and especially when there's disagreements, when there's different perspectives in work, that instead of, you know, starting out with like, no, we shouldn't do that, that's not a good idea, as looking at it and saying to the colleague or to the person, tell me more about that. How come you're so passionate about that project? Even when your mind's going, dumbest idea ever, right?
Right.
Have this conscious curiosity of, I'm going to be curious about everything and I'm not going to shut things down before I'm open.
Makes sense. Makes sense. I see that happen a lot in various organizations where there are some people who just, for whatever reason, are very negative about everything new and every change and immediately shut down. And they're like, that's just bullshit. That's stupid. I don't understand why we have to do it that way. The way we were doing it is fine.
Right.
And whether or not the new idea is better or worse, it doesn't matter because they're not open to it.
Right.
And it just breeds more negativity
and
dark energy in the room.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that any other way. But
no, it's dark energy. And you make me think of Carol Dweck's work. She has an amazing podcast about growth mindset,
growth mindset.
What if, as opposed to being closed? Yeah. And just that switch also connects to friendships at work, because if you're open to other people, the boomerang's going to come right back and people will be open to you. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
What if changed my life?
Yeah.
There's a scene in the movie. I don't know if you've seen it. Letters to Juliet.
Probably, no, I haven't.
10, 15 years ago. And it was, I can't even think of any of the cast members, although I can see it and see them all see all their faces. Amanda Seyfried and I don't know. Anyway, there's one scene though, where there's like climactic moment where she's like reading the letter to Juliet. Long story. I'm not going to tell you the whole premise, but the idea is basically to not put yourself in a situation where you're saying, what if, with regret, you know, what if I had done that and I didn't do it and now I'm stuck without ever knowing. And it, between Carol Dweck's work and reading and seeing that movie, for me, the what if has always been, well, what if I like that? Not what if I crash and burn, because who gives a shit? I can rise from the ashes and I'm fine. You know, I've picked myself up from the dirt a thousand times and I will do it a thousand more times. But what if, like, let's start a podcast. What if it's really great?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if I meet amazing people like Tia Graham and I get to talk to them about really cool things? What if, you know, so that I don't get to some point later in my life and say, gee, you know, what if I had done that?
Would that have been cool?
You know?
Yeah.
What would I have learned? You know, I didn't want to ever say what if as a regret. I wanted to say what if as like a rainbow, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big motivator of mine. Actually, I think about that a lot, of being in my 80s and I don't want to live with regret and be like, oh, I should have done it that way, or I should have spent more time, or I should have, you know? Yeah. Cause it goes by quick. I feel it. Life goes by quick.
So fast.
So,
I mean, I remember early on when my kids were very little, I was a new mom, and someone, I have no idea who, said at the end of the night when you're tucking your babies into bed, would you regret not having spent playtime and reading time and one-on-one time with them? Or would you regret not having a sink full of clean, or not having an empty sink, or not having it full of dirty dishes? Like, which, you know, and it was like crystal clear. Like, we drive ourselves to get all of the chores done before. I mean, I'm always a have to before I want to kind of person, but at that point, I gave myself permission to have dirty dishes in my sink for days, if that's the way. I mean, not with bugs or whatever, but, you know, like to just leave the dirty dishes there if it meant that I had more meaningful playtime, positive time interacting with my kids.
Absolutely. Like
that, to me, was the win-win-win.
Yes.
Who gives a crap about dirty dishes? 5 minutes after you clean the sink, there's more dirty dishes in it. It's a never-ending thing. So,
No, I had exact same yesterday because I have such a busy week. And I had this huge to-do list and I was like, oh, I should probably do 3 hours of work on Sunday. And then I was like, no, you know what? I'm going to play with my kids all day. We were skiing and then we played board games and we went, you know, and I was like, no, I'm just going to figure it out on Monday. And I'm going to, you know.
Yeah. It's a much better use of your time.
Way better use of a Sunday.
And bonding.
At all.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And you would have missed out on a ton of really amazing, tiny little slivers of moments of fun that meant a huge amount to you and your daughters.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Well, I'm glad you started this podcast.
Yes, me too. Me too. Okay. So let's get to the 7 quick questions.
Okay.
What 6 words would you use to describe yourself?
Ooh, I'm going to say...
Whatever comes off the top.
Okay. Whatever comes out to describe myself: energetic, hopeful, zest.
Ooh, good one.
Ambitious, connected, and fun.
Great. Great list. What is your favorite way to spend a day?
Ooh, outside with my husband and my daughters and doing some kind of activity, whether it's skiing or swimming or hiking. But outside doing an activity with them.
Some verb. Okay. Yeah. So that was yesterday when you went skiing.
Exactly. Awesome. Skiing with them yesterday. Awesome.
Awesome. What is your favorite childhood memory?
Ooh, good one. So my favorite childhood memory, it's not an exact day, but what comes to mind is my grandparents had the summer house on a lake here in Canada. And I remember just being with all of my cousins and aunts and uncles and grandparents and, you know, playing in the sand, in the water, and just this summer.
Lovely.
Summer vibe. Yeah. Of like family and hanging out at the lake.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What's your favorite meal?
Ooh, I would say Greek. Like Greek salad, you know, good Greek chicken.
What I have for lunch.
Tzatziki. Oh, love it. I love Greek food.
That's awesome. It's so good. So good.
Yeah.
So good. My stepmother on the fly using the internet figured out how to make tzatziki sauce at home. And so good. Holy shit. Yeah. It's delicious.
Yeah.
Okay. What one piece of advice would you like to give your younger self?
Do not care what other people think. Yeah. I think as a younger person and, you know, you care a lot about peers and this and even boys like and men of like what, like who cares what they think? I that's what I would say.
I think too many of us think that we have to control or that we have any control over what other people think of us.
Mm-hmm. Give it too much power.
And we don't have any control over what other people think of us. And it's none of our business what other people think of us. And the only thing that matters is what we think of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Good. Yep.
All right. What is one thing you would most like to change about the world?
I would like to change how much we're hurting the earth, how much we're hurting Mother Nature.
Yeah. Yeah. Too many people think, oh, you know, it doesn't matter what I do. Someone else will pick up the slack. And too many people say that there's no one doing it.
Yeah, no. And like from a government, huge corporation standpoint, that's like, I would love to see huge changes where, you know, we're caring about long term.
Yeah. There is no planet B yet. So.
Right. Right. I don't want to live on Mars. I don't think my kids do either.
Right. No. There's no atmosphere anyway.
Yeah.
All right, terrible joke. Not even funny. All right. Last question. What TV shows are you binging right now?
Ooh. So my husband and I are watching Yellowstone, that one. And honestly, we've been watching a lot of Netflix stand-up comedians and just having, you know, laughing for 60 minutes. So it's not really binging, but I was, you know, we pick different comedians and watch them. Oh, and we're watching some old episodes of The Office too, which are pretty funny.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. My kids always loved The Office. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Yellowstone. I just wrote that down. I'll take a look. We're always looking for something new.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Tia. This has been really great.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so happy for you. Happy birthday. I'm so happy about your book. The coincidence of that, or the confluence of that with your birthday, just such good energy for me. Mm. I think that's really great. And so everything, all the links to find Tia and her book, happyleaderbook.com, Be a Happy Leader, will all be in the show notes. So please scroll down, all of her socials. And this has been such a great episode. Thank you for
being part of the... I know. I feel like we can hang out for a few more hours. This is awesome. I'd love to do it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would love that. That'd be great.
Oh, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you for being here. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Permission to Heal. I hope you found it moving and inspirational. Please remember, you don't need anyone else's permission to trust and follow your heart. You have the power within you. Subscribe to Permission to Heal so you don't miss any new episodes, and please share this with your friends.